afternoon, and welcome to the Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Moorhead. Outside of the tiny town of Grandin in Putnam County, there's a ranch that's frozen in time. No, it's not a museum. It's home to Tommy Clay Jr. and his son Chance, a seventh-generation cattleman. The family preserved their land by selling its development rights to the state. That type of sale is known as an easement, and as WUFT's Rose Schnabel reports, it keeps the land looking like it did a long, long time ago.
How long has this land been in your family?
First deed to one of the pieces of one of the parcels here was in 1858.
And it's been continuously ever since?
Continuously ever since. It's grown from that original parcel. This piece has been our family since 1858.
Do you have a first memory here?
I guess you've got, you know, at one point there was four generations here on the ranch, and I think just working together, especially three generations, my grandfather, grandmother, my father, and I, and just being in cow pen and cow work and being out on the land with three generations.
And are you the only child?
We come from a line of only children.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I told Dad, I said, when I start having children, I'm going to create a workforce. And I quickly realized the older I got and watched ranches and farms and families split apart when the time came for, you know, generational, moving generation to generation. I said, no, one or two is enough. You know, eventually you have cousins, first and second and third cousins working together, and it just eventually it's not going to be a dynamic that works anymore.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the decision to do an easement. What motivated that?
Preservation of the property and finances. Fortunately, all three living generations of the family were all for it. He is the key. Chance is the key. And he was all in. He's not sitting here waiting for me to die and sell it and get rich. Financially, we were fine, but we were always tight.
And has this property ever faced any development pressures, whether it be, I know that there's a mine nearby, right?
So that was another large help in this, the mine right there. And we went through some years and bidding wars over our south end on between two different companies wanting to purchase this land. My grandmother helped facilitate a bidding battle, and fortunately, it didn't really pan out, and we're glad we didn't end up doing it. Money would have been substantial, but what we had for the sand quality they wanted wasn't really there. We were compensated for some testing, and matter of fact, when they were doing our appraisal, there was another company up here out of South Florida that was actually drilling test sites, and it worked out hand in hand. They're up here drilling, and you know, we're riding appraisers around. There's guys with drill rigs drilling core samples and, you know, holes in the ground. Oh yeah, we're thinking about mining this here, you know. And so I think that helped out too. Timing was perfect on that. But yes, we've had some pressure in the past on with sand mine especially.
And then what would you tell other landowners who are considering an easement or who are hesitant about one?
I thought after we got this done, we're reasonably well known in the area. The people would just line up and jump on board. I think they were hesitant because this did take us 12 years, and they said, we don't want to go through that. And I would tell them to be patient, number one. I'm patient. When you do finally reach that golden grail and offer, don't jump on the first offer unless it's what you wanted. Ultimately, we got pretty much what we wanted and felt we deserved.
The more you give up, the more you're going to get paid. So I think it's depending on what you want to do with your land or what you want the future of it to look like. You need to explore the options and the programs that are out there.
That was WUFT's Rose Schnabel discussing conservation easements with cattle ranchers Tommy and Chance Clay. More of their story and photos are available at WUFT.org. Do you have a story idea for The Rundown? We want to hear from you. Email us at therundown@wuft.org or tap the Talk to Us button on the WUFT mobile app. And if you want to listen to previous episodes, visit wuft.org/therundown or find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. But first, Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. This week's question is, what town was reportedly named after a beauty contest winner in the 1890s? Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. Well, there is certainly a lot going on over the next few days here in Gainesville, and yes, at the University of Florida. Tomorrow is homecoming, and UF is closed. So are city offices. There's a concert, and then on Saturday, the big game. And for most cities and towns, this is absolutely not common. Here's Mayor Harvey Ward.
It is one of the very few things that involves the entire community. I mean, we shut down Alachua County Public Schools on Homecoming Friday. And it's just growing up here, you don't know that that's not normal.
And tomorrow there will likely be a lot of people in town looking forward to taking the day off. Incidentally, our TV station, WUFT-TV, will broadcast the parade live. Look for our radio team, too. They'll be there as they were last year. That's when we asked people about why they'd come and what they were seeing. Let's take a listen to some of their responses.
My name is David Clulow, and we are on the corner of 13th and West University in Gainesville, about to watch the parade. What are you going to see at this parade? I think you'll see a lot of different schools and organizations and groups all coming down through the middle of town.
My name is Abigail Rose Posada. We're here today because me and my sister really wanted to be here, and we like the parade.
My name is Florian Tokorian, and we are at the UF Homecoming Parade. Well, I came because it's one of my favorite traditions. I go every single year, and it's just nice seeing, like, the city basically come out. Like, I see, like, most of the city here, and it's just nice. Like, the atmosphere is great. There's so much, like, school spirit.
My name is Tiffany Morgan, and we are at the UF Homecoming Parade. What are we likely to see in a parade like this? Well, we got a whole bunch of different parts of the university and parts of the city. Everybody's decking out their different vehicles. Kind of like the Macy's Day Parade, but a local version.
I'm Spencer Schmidt. Right now I see the UF Surf Club Parade float. They're all partying. They're all in their swimsuits having fun. Looks like they're having a good time. They're dancing. They've got a big slide that they're going down. Yeah, I think there's a pool on there. Looks like it.
My name is Letha Miller. I come to help celebrate the Florida Gators. And also, while I'm here, I brought my grandbabies out to help celebrate. They love Florida Gators, so do I. My husband, we all are Gator fans. So we're here just to celebrate. We are thankful that we're here in the city of Gainesville, Florida.
My name is Griffin Morris, and we're at the Gator Parade. What was the best float today? The surf one is really raw. There was like a giant slide, and they kept on surfing down it, and like that was pretty much it. They're pretty hyped and everything.
That was a look back at last year's homecoming parade. Incidentally, not only is UF closed tomorrow, along with Gainesville schools, but Santa Fe College will also shut their doors. Tomorrow will also be the 102nd annual Gator Growl concert at the Stephen C. O'Connell Center. It will be headlined by DJ and producer Steve Aoki. And then, yes, it's the big game on Saturday, where the Florida Gators play Mississippi State. Kickoff starts at 4:15 p.m. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Moorhead. Coming up on the show, I talk to the director of the Harn Museum of Art about some exciting new developments coming soon. That's after a short break.
Supported by Wild Birds Unlimited of Gainesville and Ocala with this tip. Many species of warblers migrate south to Alachua County as the weather begins to cool. Pine, palm, and yellow-throated warblers are pretty little birds that will add joyful songs to your backyard. Depending on the species, suet, sunflower chips, and bark butter will bring them to your feeders. Wild Birds Unlimited, next to Fresh Market in Gainesville and next to Publix in Ocala on State Road 200.
It's October 1970, and Quebec is in crisis. A militant group is stoking resentments, and the province has two paths, political violence or democratic change. Next time on The World.
Monday through Thursday at 3 on WUFT.
Laugh Local, a Gainesville comedy and theatrical group, takes a serious turn with On Tyranny, a theatrical resistance. Based on 20 shared lessons and ideas for preserving our freedoms from author-historian Timothy Snyder. On stage at the Limelight Event Venue on Northwest 34th Boulevard near Dolce Vita Bakery. three evening shows, October 17th through October 19th. Ticket info and details at communityimprov.com.
The Trump administration is rolling out changes to the U.S. citizenship test, making it harder for immigrants to become naturalized citizens. What's behind those new standards? That's on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons at 4 on WUFT.
Welcome back to The Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Moorhead. Art museums sometimes get a reputation for being, let's just say, pretentious. But for Leanne Chesterfield, the director of the Harn Museum of Art in Gainesville, art is for everyone. I spoke to her earlier and asked her about that exact reputation. Let's take a listen. Sometimes there's this perception of art and art museums that it's largely inaccessible or very academic. What would be a piece of advice you'd give to someone who's maybe curious about art but doesn't know where to start?
You're absolutely right. That's something that all art museums face. And we try so hard at the Harn to make sure people feel welcome. I would say there's no right answer. Anyone can come in and like what they like and not like what they don't like. And so I'm not going to tell you what you like or what's good or what's bad. We've curated some exhibitions for people to come in and look at, and we want them to come in and make their own decisions. And so that's why we try to have a real variety of what we bring in, because we know people are going to like different things. Different artwork speaks to you in different ways. And so we want to give you as many chances as possible to come in and just, again, see what you like.
So I heard the Harn is working on some renovations right now, and people who are visiting might see a bunch of construction work. What exactly are you guys working on, and what can we expect?
We are renovating some space that will be brand new gallery space. That's the exciting part of the renovation. And the great thing is we're open throughout. We were able to do that. We're so happy to do that because we've got such great exhibitions going on. We're going to take some old office space that honestly needed to be upgraded anyway. We're going to make that actually gallery space, and we're going to move the offices to another space in the museum that people honestly don't even realize is there. So really putting the art up front and center.
And you mentioned you have quite a few exhibits that are still ongoing right now, despite the construction. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the things that you have on display right now?
Right now we have French Modernism. It's 1850 to 1950. I think of it as a wonderful survey of French modern art. All kinds of names like Edgar Degas, Rodin, Cézanne, Monet, Matisse. Just really beautiful works, fun works to look at. And there's different themes like portraiture. That's one of my favorites. But there's also still life. There's something for everyone. That's in our main exhibition hall. We also have Ghanaian fashion, we have contemporary photography, as well as our permanent modern gallery, and the Florida art, as we call it, which is all Florida themed. It's artists who came to Florida to paint. And then in our Asian art wing, the Coffrin Asian art wing, we have a beautiful new exhibition of Japanese contemporary print artists. And I've just been blown away. I have to say, I didn't know very much about that until we were given the collection from Anne and Jerry Godsey. We were so happy to have it. And this is just a small portion of their entire collection that they've given us. And so this is the first of many absolutely amazing exhibitions to come.
That was Leanne Chesterfield, the director of the Harn Museum of Art, talking about the history of the museum, as well as some upcoming renovations. The Harn is actually turning 35 this year, and according to Chesterfield, they started way back in 1990 with just 3,000 pieces of art. Today, that number has grown to 14,000 pieces. In the U.S., nearly 2 million people don't have access to clean drinking water. That's according to data from the U.S. Water Alliance. Each year on October 16th, they try to call attention to the issue by asking people to imagine a day without water. So WUFT's Faith Smith headed out across the campus of the University of Florida to ask students their views on the importance of water.
My name is William Barbin. I grow oranges. When we're irrigating, it's super important to keep the trees alive, obviously, but then also when it gets super cold, the water can actually help the trees not freeze.
My name is Jose Colada. Every day I walk my dog, and at the end, he's always looking for the water. I think when you see people drink water, obviously, like, everyone likes it, it's refreshing. But when you see animals, you see a dog drinking from its bowl, it's nice to be reminded that, oh, it's not even a human thing. It's a lot more universal than that.
My name's Andrea Guzman. Just be really upsetting. I don't know, like, I wouldn't be able to go to the pool or something or shower. Wait, that's awful. Actually, I don't think that I want to live in a world without water at all.
Those were UF students talking about the importance of water. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Moorhead. Coming up after the break, we ask our listeners to look up to the night sky for a new series we're calling Constellation Conversation. As a reminder, our trivia question this week, what town was reportedly named after a beauty contest winner in the 1890s? Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. We'll be right back.
On the next Florida Roundup, a charter school company wants to open in dozens of school buildings across the state. Thanks to a new law, it may not have to pay rent. How is school choice impacting your neighborhood school? Email us radio@thefloridaroundup.org. Then join us Friday noon until 1 on WUFT.
This week on Science Friday, how a reality show upended what scientists thought they knew about metabolism. Plus, the quest to relocate body parts can have unintended consequences. That's on Science Friday. Fridays at 2 on WUFT.
WUFT presents Artistry in Motion, celebrating local artists who inspire us with their creativity and passion. Artist stories are broadcast throughout the day on all WUFT radio and TV platforms and at WUFT.org/artistryinmotion. Listen, watch, and be inspired by these amazing artists. Special thanks to our arts partners, Marion Cultural Alliance, Gainesville Fine Arts Association, and Arts Council of Alachua County, and to PNC Bank, who makes this initiative possible through their generous support.
WUFT's Greater Good, Florida's award-winning storytelling series about the people and places in our communities truly making a difference. From arts organizations to animal rescues, life-saving services to educational resources, and so much more. Greater Good is made possible by program funders, Showcase Properties of Central Florida, and IQ Fiber. Tune in Fridays at 8:30 p.m. and throughout the week. More information at WUFT.org/greatergood.
I'm Terry Gross.
And I'm Tanya Mosley, Fresh Air's new co-host.
Tanya, what do you like best about doing long-form interviews?
You know those aha moments, hearing something new from a guest that I never thought of or heard before?
Me too, but you know what I like least?
What?
When it's 10 at night and I still have 100 pages to read before I can go to bed.
Ditto.
Fresh Air, weekdays.
From NPR and WHYY.
Heard weekdays at noon on WUFT 89.1, 90.1.
Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Moorhead. For thousands of years, humans have looked up at the night sky and wondered, what is up there? And while today's technology can start putting the pieces together, for many of us, the mysteries of the universe remain just that, a mystery. To try to answer that question, we've started an occasional series called Constellation Conversation. Today we hear from Deshika Narayanan from the University of Florida Department of Astronomy about what we can expect to see in the night sky over the next few days and weeks.
My name is Deshika Narayanan, and I'm an associate professor in the astronomy department at the University of Florida. October is a really active time. There's a number of planets that are up. So right now, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn are all up in the night sky. And you can see them with your naked eye. They're going to look like bright stars, but they're going to be a little bit bigger than stars, and that's often how you know that they're a planet. There's a comet, the Swan Comet, which was just discovered only last month, and it's observable right near Mars with binoculars. You couldn't easily see it with your naked eye, but with just a pair of field binoculars, you'd be able to see it. One of the most exciting things that's in the night sky right now is the Andromeda Galaxy, which is a Milky Way-sized galaxy that's about 2.5 million light years away, and it's our nearest massive neighbor. With that, you could only see it with binoculars or with a small telescope. It'd be difficult to see with your naked eye, at least near the city lights of Gainesville. One of the exciting things about the Andromeda Galaxy is that the Milky Way, our own galaxy, is going to merge into the Andromeda Galaxy. We think this is going to happen starting in about 2 billion years. The Milky Way and Andromeda are going to go through this cosmic dance where they're going to first pass by each other. And when they pass by each other, it's going to totally destroy the shape of both galaxies. And a bunch of really amazing things are going to happen then. So first, dynamically, the Sun and the whole solar system has a pretty high probability of getting kicked out of where we are in the local neighborhood and getting kicked out to something like 5 to 10 times its distance from the center of the galaxy. So if there's any people on the Earth 2 billion years from now, they're going to get an amazing view of both the Milky Way and the Andromeda Galaxy smashing together. About 3 to 4 billion years after that, the two galaxies will come in for a final merging, and all of the gas in the centers of the galaxies will funnel in toward the very middle and feed the supermassive black holes. Galaxy mergers tend to both transform the shapes of galaxies, but also they tend to fuel supermassive black holes and a bunch of star formation in the center of these galaxies. So I myself do theoretical work. So I study galaxy formation and how the very first galaxies after the Big Bang formed and evolved to look like they do today. Day to day, the work is all math and computer coding and physics. And sometimes you forget the big picture of what you're working on. And when you step back and think about it, or when you watch a NOVA show about astronomy, you get to actually participate in the wonder of it all. So recently, about 3 or 4 years ago, the U.S. and European astronomy communities launched the James Webb Space Telescope, JWST. It's seen as a successor to Hubble, but it works in a really different way. And one of the really cool things it can do is see some of the very first galaxies that were formed after the Big Bang. So there's been an exciting field of research that's totally opened up studying the very first galaxies. The University of Florida Astronomy Department hosts a public night that starts at 8:30 p.m. at the Campus Teaching Observatory. It's regularly scheduled on Friday nights. If you follow at UF_CTO, that's UF Campus Teaching Observatory on Twitter X, you can see updates about this.
That was Deshika Narayanan from the UF Astronomy Department talking about what we can expect to see in the night sky over the next few days and weeks as part of our new occasional series, Constellation Conversation. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. I'm Kristen Moorhead. Special thanks to the Dean of the College, Hub Brown, and Interim News Director, Ethan Majok. Do you have comments or questions about the show today or ideas for future shows? Email us at therundown@wuft.org. Oh, and before I forget, our trivia question this week was, what town was reportedly named after a beauty contest winner in the 1890s? The answer is the town of Bell, named for Bell Fletcher. That's it for The Rundown. I'm Kristen Moorhead. The news is next.